Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.
A grain of rice is going to tip the scale. Just remember that, lad.
There's a small bit of a needle there.
Now, come on,
Mayo, you've got to get Andy Moran into the game.
Our mission was to show that we're no longer the whipping boys of Munster.
Hello, folks, out in podcast land. I think that's how Dalo usually starts these shows. No Dalo today, unfortunately. Our brand new studio in Examiner Towers has been shut down for the moment. So Larry Ryan, which you hear, I've had to step out from behind the sound desk. I was probably getting away with press and record for too long there. But anyway, look, obviously difficult times to record podcasts at the moment. Wouldn't make sense bringing Dalo down from Clare in these circumstances. But look, we're putting a show together for you anyway, a GA show. I'm not sure if it's an Allianz League show, but look, thanks to Allianz for their continued backing of the show. But look, in the vacuum of action, we've got Dr. Ed Colin for you today. Now, we've had a lot of correspondence from people over the last few days wondering what to do with teams and kids at home, putting together training bits of training plans for them, that kind of thing. And Ed has been doing that stuff all his career. He's a skill acquisition specialist, to give him his official title. And of course, he has vast experience on GA touchlines up and down the country, though he spends most of his time now coaching golfers from around the world. He lectures in sports science at CIT and at UCD. And look, we thank him for taking the time today, because I know it's a busy time for lectures at the moment, repurposing all their material into online lectures. So I met Ed earlier on today down in the Rochestone Park Hotel. We maintained a respectable social distance for the duration of the podcast and took all the usual precautions. But he had some fascinating stuff on what, you know, how people can use, sports people can use this time as an opportunity almost to reset and to re-educate themselves and to maybe come back as a better player, as a better collective unit at the end of it. He also lists plenty of resources along the way that parents and coaches and athletes can turn to. And as the day goes on, we'll pop all of those resources onto the podcast notes for this show, so you can maybe put together something for whatever team that you're involved in, or if you're a player or a parent, some resources you might want to look into over the next weeks and months. All right, Ed, thanks for joining us. Have you ever experienced anything like this in terms of challenges for coaches and athletes? And
yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me in, Larry. It is unprecedented. It's incredible. It is the kind of strange thing where there are some small parallels, I suppose, because not to the same scale, of course, but in a sport perspective, there are athletes all the time who can't train because they might be injured, or there's games called off all the time for things when all of a sudden we're kind of left twiddling our thumbs in a smaller capacity. But something on this scale, no, I don't think anyone has ever experienced something like this. But look, I think as we're here today to talk about, there's plenty that people can be actually getting on with if they kind of know where to look for.
Yeah, like, I mean, I think I, from reading your work in The Examiner, and I might be slightly misquoting you here now, but I think it's like something you might say. I mean, a lot of people, they almost don't have time to practice because they're too busy training, you know. So maybe this is an opportunity to get a bit of practice done.
No, that's spot on, in fact, I think. I think one of the things that this time can do is an opportunity for people to have a good look at maybe their current behaviours, you know. It's an opportunity with maybe even enough time to change behaviours. And I think you hit the nail on the head there. When we're in competition mode, weeks seem to just flow into each other, and before you know it, you're either at the tail end of a competition and you're wondering where did all that time go, or you might even be out of a competition and you're wondering where did it all go wrong. This is a fantastic opportunity, I think, for people to engage in some reflective practice and to engage in, you know, having a look at the behaviours that they're currently engaged in and before this break, this compulsory break, but also to kind of assess what are the behaviours that they'd like to leave behind when this lifts, and go forward with a new behaviour and a better behaviour based on going through some reflecting.
And I presume you've seen in your career over the years, like, players who've had either long layoffs through injury or even maybe suspension or whatever, that have improved a particular aspect of their game over that period and come back a different player in many ways.
Absolutely. I think one of the encouraging things for people out there is to realise that in times like this, when you have time on your hands, it is really important to allot that time to quality tasks. It's not about quantity right now. It's actually about quality.
Yeah.
And with good quality, you can have a significant impact on processes that you might normally ignore, but now you have an opportunity to get better at them. And as you said, with the time that we're looking at here, with the potential time for the layoff, there's real time on our available to make some significant changes. And now a lot of that might be psychological, in that it might be about thinking about how you do things. It might be people engaging in some kind of visualization programs, of which there's great things online to guide people through that. It might be people engaging in some kind of meditation. There's some great apps out there for meditation. It might be things even from the athlete's perspective, improving things that get sidelined very often in competition mode and in heavy training mode, which is improve your mobility, your flexibility.
Yeah,
you don't need that much space to do this type of work, and there are some fantastic resources online to guide people through those type of activities. That don't need a lot of space, don't even need a lot of time, but if you're able to do it on a daily basis and even twice a day, it can have a significant impact on how the body feels.
Yeah, I mean, you mentioned the psychological aspect there before. We'll get in now in a few minutes to the different things people can do. But I suppose we also should consider it's obviously a very stressful time for a lot of people, and young people are going to be worried out there. They'll be stressed over this. I suppose it's important as well not to load too much on people. We've had a mail from one parent where a young child has already got a long program to do and he's a bit worried about it and all that kind of stuff. So, I mean, it's important to consider the feelings of the people involved as well and not to load too much on them.
Absolutely, absolutely. Even in preparation for today, from our kind of chats before, and I kind of did a little do's and don'ts, a little do's and don'ts.
Great,
and
yeah.
One of those, it was actually just that idea. Don't overdo things. Overdo things, because you have time. We know this is going to be for at least a couple of weeks, and it may be longer, and you do have time. And I think especially for young athletes, it's to remember that they're young. And as you're saying, the importance of the seriousness of this situation cannot be ignored. Everyone needs to be really clear and very vigilant in following the guidelines that have been set down by the government and the HSE. And so social distancing and hand washing and all that is really important. But it does also mean that people can also just maybe take a breather as well, let's say, because
yeah.
Our lives are pretty hectic at the moment. And, you're just saying that email from the parent, kids' lives are more hectic than ever before, especially the kids who maybe are involved in multiple sports with multiple teams. It could be a lovely opportunity for them just to take a breather. But even within that, for athletes who are injured, let's say, and there's always athletes somewhere in some capacity who are injured, this is not an opportunity for you to overdo your rehab.
I was going to say that, yeah. Because, I mean, the nature of these guys, they say, oh, this is an opportunity. I'm going to pack in as much as I can in here. There would be a danger of doing too much.
There's always a danger of doing too much, even in good times.
Yeah,
so
sure.
So the concern I would see is that people do take stock, but also then just to take a breather, take a moment and realise, okay, I have 2 weeks. If, let's say, I was injured, I still have 2 weeks to get my work done. Maybe I engage a little bit with the physio to now see, well, I actually have more time than normal. Is there anything additional, without it being excessive, that I can do? But it's also to avoid binge.
Yeah.
Anything.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And again, that's the big thing.
Yeah, we it's binge a natural watch experience
and
at the moment, isn't it? Yeah.
And we binge activity, let's say, It's okay.
It's tempting. It's tempting to do it, isn't it?
It's very tempting. And I'm assuming all the streaming websites and everything, they're probably coming up with fantastic offers right now.
And as you say, you do see results as well. If you concentrate on a particular aspect of your physique or your mobility or performance, and there would be a temptation to maybe cram too much into a short period then, wouldn't
there? Absolutely. And again, I always say to people, think about what's sustainable. this is now not an opportunity to cram 6 weeks worth of work into 2 weeks.
Yeah, and then,
of course, when the 2 weeks, you know, maybe lifts, and if we're fortunate enough that it does lift in 2 weeks' time, great. But then all of a sudden you're back to normality, and your body will probably be wondering what's going on now. why isn't the stimulus there that was once there?
Sure. So
things that I would be suggesting to people based on, you know, experience in the past of working with injured athletes at different times is develop a routine. Something that actually that marks out the day nicely, that isn't overloading the day or overloading the body or mind excessively, and also make people realize that it's not a holiday, so the body will still crave certain elements of routine from their normal weekly thing. So to recognize that routine is probably a good thing. And then, as I said, see it as an opportunity because, you know, I certainly speak from my own perspective. There's always behaviors I'm sure that I can improve on or develop further and stuff, and see it as an opportunity for some behavior change. And behavior change, the essence of behavior change is something that is not forced. It's not rushed. It's something that is hopefully sustainable. So that's all speaking to a good pace about how you apply yourself to anything you're doing.
Sure. Maybe if we start from a coach's perspective in terms of, we've had a few emails in. I'm just looking here now, one from Lee Morale here, who I suppose he's wondering, he said, if you could ask Ed, would you recommend going back to a pre-season type training at the moment? Particularly with clubs, as they look towards, I suppose there's a bit of uncertainty. Limerick have already cancelled club month, probably other counties will follow suit. There's a bit of uncertainty as to when these guys will ever be back playing, whether it'll be 2 weeks or 2 months or longer. Would there be a temptation on a club basis to go to a sort of a pre-season type approach to your training, or to try and keep guys ticking over who are already pretty fit at this stage?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think if we look in the, we can only go based on what the guidelines are right now, which is that it's a 2 week shutdown. Now, so we can't be thinking, oh, but it might be five and it might be seven.
Yeah.
It might not. We have to go with what we hear. Now, if that changes, so be it, and we'll adapt accordingly. But for a two-week perspective, I don't think it would be necessary to go right the way back to a pre-season thing, even though it is a great question because no doubt people are thinking that way. I would be more likely to encourage people to engage in maintenance-type work. So, like things I've even written down here, turn your home for, and this is now, again, we're speaking to the athletes out there. We're speaking to people who are maybe more high-performing mindsets, let's say.
Yeah, sure.
Very easily to just turn your house into a gym a little bit, you know. You don't need that much space, but there's, all the body needs is resistance. The body just needs a stimulus to push against. And that's, so be that from a mobility perspective, with some stretching routines and regimes. I know Mike Carroll at Fit for Golf on Twitter has made all his mobility routines freely available online now for the coming weeks.
And we'll include these links in the podcast as well, you know. We'll make a note of these at the end of the show.
Another one was the ready state, which actually speaks directly to what Liam was asking there. Kelly Starrett and his crew at the ready state, they are always looking at how athletes can stay ready, basically. So they have programs on their website and on their Twitter feed that speaks to the different elements of where athletes are at, let's say. Because there's going to be a lot of people having to make personal decisions for themselves because we're all in a very different space. People's, you know, the space they may have at home, they might be living in an apartment, but don't have stairs or so on and so forth, let's say, you know, or a back garden to be able to go out to or whatever. So people will have to exercise some element of common sense, but also what's right for them in this situation. And I think where coaches are concerned, I think the advent of WhatsApp now and all these kind of group chats can be a fantastic source of engagement. And I'd be encouraging coaches and coaches, be that the coaches who take care of the skills and the tactics of the team, but also the coaches who engage with the physical side of the team, to engage with the athletes, ask them good questions, you know, post in a question, say, okay, guys, throw in a video of your top five exercises you're going to do today.
Yeah.
Just to stimulate that kind of, oh, he's doing that. Oh, I never even thought of that one, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
And let us know the name of it and what are the kind of weird and wonderful names you have for your exercises and all this kind of thing. Or how have you adapted an exercise for the gym for something that you can do at home? you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So that'll be something from a trainer's perspective. From the coach's perspective, I'd be encouraging them to engage with the players, with their players in a way to think tactically, because again, they can't go out and start playing ball with people around the place. From what I heard only recently, club grounds and alleys and all this are closed. Gates may be open, but insurance is an issue if they're actually advised not to be there.
Yeah, so totally. They're not covered if you're on club grounds over the next couple of weeks.
So again, that's an opportunity for the coaches to, again, you know, speak with their performance analyst and say, can you put up 5 clips of plays and ask the players to, okay, guys, anyone have any ideas how we could have stopped that goal or that score, or how could we have ensured that this became a goal instead of a point? Or
sure.
At least then it keeps people engaged for, and again, now we're speaking to these type of athletes and coaches and trainers who are kind of high performance mindset, let's say, or forward thinking mindsets, let's say.
And it can be hard even with the program of league matches week on week to get enough of that stuff done.
Absolutely.
Or as much as you'd like to get done.
Absolutely. And I think that's the other side of this then, with the advent of e-books and Kindle and all these type of things. There's some unbelievable books that people could put in saying, okay, look, as a group, why don't we, you know, create a book club? Here's a really good, short, succinct book around a certain topic. Let's have a read off it over the next week, and we'll throw in some Q&A, and every 2 days I'll throw in a question per chapter type of thing.
Great, yeah.
That's something that can happen within groups. And even like from a coach's perspective, they can do that within their own backroom team, you know? Like there's books, Wade Gilbert has a great book, Coaching Better Every Season. It's so coach-oriented, you know? And there's even tasks within that book that you could be thinking, these are pen and paper tasks that they could be doing in the meantime and working away on things like that, you know? I think, as I said, I see this time as an opportunity for people to still engage, but just maybe with a different stimulus, you know?
Yeah.
From a sport and a performance perspective, let's say.
Yeah, I mean, we might stay with the high performance guys for the moment. I mean, is GPS part of it? Could guys take away their GPS units and measure them remotely? Is that a thing that's done?
The most of the kind of team unit GPS are based around being in close proximity to the radar to pick up.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. Yeah,
there are a huge amount of wrist wearables,
of course,
that they can just, again, the iPhone has them, the iWatch, there's Fitbits, there are Garmin do ones, there's loads, in fact. That you can just, you know, again, your physical trainer, your S&C coach could say, look, try and get your heart rate up to about, you know, 80%, 75% of this, if you're making sure that you're not near anybody and so on and so forth. And in that, you can do some reps and sets of different types of, you know, again, movements and the like, and being able to then feed that back into the system. Say, okay, well, actually, today I did the following and I did this for this length of time. And again, like that, you're correct in saying, as far as these monitoring apps, a lot of teams are still are engaged in monitoring apps. The things like Stat Sports would have, MetroFit would have.
Yeah.
So these are things that they will still engage with on a daily basis. What was your sleep quality like? What was your, so on and so forth.
Sure.
It may change a little bit because they're not doing the level that they normally do, but it might just keep people involved and engaged, let's say, you know.
Yeah, we're not encouraging all our club managers to turn into Big Brother now here.
No, not at all.
But, for the elite teams, yeah. I mean, it's a reality, I suppose, that they will keep guys putting in a certain amount of load during this period.
Well, that's an interesting point that you even make there now, even around the managers, let's say, you know. The managers, from my experience of speaking with managers over the years, they crave more time. If I only had more time to this, if I only had more time to that.
Yeah.
Well, you have that time now. And I think one of the best ways of utilising this time is to engage in some kind of mentorship in some way, shape or form. Very easy. You reach out to someone who you'd have respect for, who you feel would be honest with you, and just say, look, you may have seen some of our games this year. You may have seen some of our training sessions maybe or something. You know what? I'd love to, you know, grab some time over FaceTime sometime over the next week or so for you to just give me some open, honest feedback. And there's a little model that we use even with our coach mentoring things that we would do from time to time is the cut, bleed, bandage method, which is to engage with someone and to be able to say up front, look, I'm going to cut you, which means this is going to hurt a little bit.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's okay, but we're doing this for all the right reasons. You're going to bleed out a bit because when you cut, you bleed. But we're going to bandage together.
Yeah.
And if people can, again, it goes back to that kind of behaviour change opportunity. See,
you're talking from the manager's point of view, that he gets a mentor to criticise what he's been
absolutely.
Doing, basically.
And absolutely. Say, but, yeah. And do it in a space where there's psychological safety is a big term at the moment in high performance sport. Mm. Can we create an environment where people feel safe to be able to expose themselves to the errors that they make? And also put themselves in front of someone who is going to cut them, essentially.
Yeah.
And say, look, that's good, but... And yeah. for the but not to have this kind of big inhale moment of, oh, what's going to come now? But,
yeah.
But actually have it in a way that... but and for the person to be with open arms, be thinking, okay, I'm looking forward to hearing what's coming next, because I'm looking forward to the opportunity to work on it now while I can, let's say.
That's a great point, because Dalo, who's normally here on a Monday morning, made that point of, I don't know how long ago now, but when he was Dublin manager, that Gary Keegan, they had a little one-on-one with the management, or himself and maybe a couple of the others, with Gary Keegan.
Right.
And he set him straight on a few things, and he said the amount he took from that or whatever they had with him to bring to back to the team was incredible.
But
and like it shocked him into thinking about things in a different way and all of this. Yeah.
But Anthony Daly would be a classic case in himself. I've heard, you know, obviously his podcast over the while, and he speaks so often about when I used to do this and now it's very different now, and how I now coach compared to how I did coach.
That's true.
So that immediately tells you this is a person who maybe when he started out coaching from being a former player and a great and a legend and everyone, you know, to now how he maybe thinks, jeepers, what I did then may not be actually what I would do now. And that type of engagement is what we would always encourage managers to be like anyway. This is an opportunity to engage in some of that reflective practice and mentorship. And again, it is, you don't want to get somebody who's going to come in and tell you're amazing, you know?
Most of these lads are well able to tell themselves that already, you know?
Yeah. But you look at some of the management teams out there and stuff, and sometimes what it lacks is that friction in the backroom team at times.
Yeah.
Behind closed doors, by all means, but when they're in front of the players, it's a unified thing. But behind closed doors, they need to have that friction to be able to say, well, no, let's argue this out so that when we go out with a united front, we are sure that this is actually what we want. And I think it's a great opportunity. I know myself, I've gone through it, and it's painful, and I've gone through it. I'm still going through it. I still engage with the mentors that I have, that I started with. And it's a form of counselling, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah.
It is. You work with a team for a period of time. It maybe doesn't work out the way you thought you did, you wanted it. You speak to people. They ask you some really hard questions. And then you realise, jeepers, you know, maybe there was things I could have and should have done better. And maybe that time when I was pointing the finger elsewhere, maybe I should have been pointing it back at myself.
Mm.
This is an opportunity to do something about that in season. It's an unbelievable opportunity.
Yeah, true.
Rather than wait until you're gone out of the setup, rather than wait until your time is up, this is a huge opportunity to do that. And there's, even from a manager's perspective, there's two books that stand out for me. There's one, The Power of Moments, okay, by the Heath brothers. Really poignant way of actually identifying when there is a moment happening and how to magnify it for it to have a significant effect.
Right. And you do hear, like, after every All-Ireland is won, the coach, the first thing that will be said in the post-match press conference is that night back in February where we lost by 20 points to Westmeath or whatever, that was a turning point or whatever. Yeah. So
that's a
be aware of those points along the way.
And that's what this book is.
Yeah.
That's what this book, they make you aware of these moments that actually can become significant, and it's not just one moment. Maybe actually there's in an environment where there's lots of players. You can imagine across the four codes within the GAA now, the ladies football, the camogie, the hurling, and the football. You can imagine the amount of pushback coming from players nowadays.
Yeah,
and imagine the amount of creativity that even the players themselves are feeding into the environment. I'd say There could be loads of these moments just passing by without anyone taking notice of them, you know?
Yeah, true, yeah.
And another book then is the Culture Code by Daniel Call. He's the guy who originally wrote the Talent Code. and he's after doing a really good book called The Culture Code. And again, these things, they're online, very easy reads.
Yeah.
You don't want to, like, you want this to be a period of time when someone maybe gets into this space of thinking, jeepers, I didn't realize there were such easy resources and easy ways, because sometimes the writing, let's say the academic papers, even things that I would do from a research perspective, they alienate people more than more
often. Can be
than
dense
not.
Enough to get into, yeah.
Can be.
Yeah.
But it is. It may suit one industry, which might be academia, but it's not really serving the coaches and managers and players on the ground. And that's why some really well-written books and newspaper articles and magazine articles can actually capture people's imaginations way better than a very dense scientific article, let's say.
Sure,
you know?
Sure.
And it's just it's that opportunity for people to take an introspective look at themselves, you know. Almost, I coin a phrase that Kieran Shannon brought to me, and it's not his phrase, but he said, "What got you here won't get you there," and it's an opportunity to just to reflect on that, just to reflect. You know, okay, what got us here? If we're in the league right now, and we're second from bottom, or we're bottom or mid table, well, is there something we can do when we come back to maybe improve the fact that we're in that position, or even if we're at the top of the table, is there something that we can actually do? Could have been better. Have we gotten a few lucky escapes? And it's just a time for that reflection.
And in terms of time, I mean, John Kiely has mentioned a few times that one of the most time-consuming parts of the job is just talking one-on-one with the players and letting them know where they're at. And I think he prides himself, in fairness, on actually making sure the players know where they stand in his setup, you know, so that if you are, you know, you're not making the match day squad, you know exactly why he thinks you're not quite there, you know. Yeah. And all of that like takes a lot of time in a manager. So, I mean, there's a chance now for guys to catch up with their players as well, isn't there?
Absolutely, absolutely. And again, John Kiely would be a fantastic example. The manner in which that team and the dynamic within Limerick currently has changed since he's gone in there. It's incredible, incredible. And again, a lot of that will come down to that work that they put into creating an environment around the players where it's probably a safe environment where they're not afraid to fail. They're not afraid to push. They're not afraid to be challenged or to challenge back, let's say. But that takes time.
And you can see that in the amount of tricks they're trying on the field these days. Like, they're all flicks. So they're obviously not afraid to,
exactly,
to mess up those.
But that's the important thing. And as you said, like, they win in All-Ireland. And then the next year, granted, they didn't repeat it, the thing. But you saw elements of that team where the behaviours from the year that they won it were still there and were actually being even improved, you know.
Yeah.
This is a team for an age. This isn't a flash of the pan team because of, again, how John Kiely and his team around him, Paul Kinnerk, these guys who are engaging the players in a very stimulating way. Probably a lot of one-on-one work that's been happening. Probably a lot of genuine engagement, but also a lot of challenge back to the players, stimulating the players to think for themselves, let's say. And I think this is a time where you can really go after that even more. But it's also a time when that challenge to players can happen. S&C coaches, you know, sending in a program to players and say, okay, you tell me what you want to do. Because you have time now. You tell me what's working. A bit more in time and engagement. It's trying to stimulate conversation. And even for S&C coaches to direct players towards good resources themselves. Have a look. An S&C salt that is worth his or her salt will, an S&C coach who's worth his or her salt is an S&C coach who's not afraid to challenge, who's not afraid to say to the players, you know, have a look at this resource here and tell me what do you hear from that? What are you seeing from that webinar? What are you seeing from what are you hearing from that podcast? And have the players come back saying, you know, they're saying we should do this. What do you think of that? And for the S&C coach to be like, well, let's talk about it.
And
because it can't be dictatorship, you know.
There's an opportunity for the S&C coach as well in these weeks, in so much as when it's collective training, it's very hard to cater for the guy who needs something a little bit different, isn't it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And again, it comes down to that individual space. And I think even for S&C coaches themselves, I know, have been in that space for years, you get caught up in the season. It just, it's over before you know it.
And you're recovery so, and everything is,
you're so locked into the needs of the athlete that you don't really take time to self-evaluate. You don't take time to self-upskill and the CPD moments, and again the online resources for that. And I think, we, as you said before we started, the amount of resources online that are making their work freely available for a month.
Totally. Yeah.
Because of COVID-19, it's been huge. It's a real community.
There's a great community spirit. Yeah, I see Kevin Mulcahy putting his movement stuff online there in the last few days.
And even the guy, Rob Carroll, the guy up the country, Rob Carroll, he's at the Video Analyst. He's made all his resources for video analysts and courses free for the next month. So yeah. There is
a
real
outreach. Community effort, isn't there? Yeah,
it's a huge effort.
And we should say as well that, as far as we're aware, the GA community are being very scrupulous in adhering to the regulations and the guidelines that
Absolutely.
Were put in place. You know,
we don't it's interesting. I think to our credit as a country, be it, you know, even though we don't have a government really per se at the moment, the response has been fantastic. Of course, you're always going to have people. You know, you'll see pictures and videos of things that you think you'd prefer not to see people engaging in, but I think overall, in general, I think people have embraced the idea that, you know what, we're a small country. We should be able to, you know, embrace whatever measures that have been put on us quickly.
And probably as good a way as any getting the message out to young people of their responsibilities is via their club managers and their the usual way they get communication from their team or whatever, isn't it?
And again, that's you hit the nail on the head there. That's where leadership is key, you know.
Yeah.
That the managers and coaches should realise the role they actually can play here, because our kids may not listen to us as often, but they listen to teachers. You know what I mean? They listen to their coaches in the training, maybe sometimes a lot quicker and soon, you know, and sooner and more in depth than they may a parent kind of thing. Like, you know, so I think people need to take stock of the reach that they have. In this time.
So what about you mentioned do's and don'ts? Any don'ts for coaches at the moment?
I think for coaches at the moment, it's to avoid, and it, like we said earlier, it's to avoid overloading them with content, you know? It's to pepper people with stimulating content is more than anything else. Give them time to digest something. You could very, very, very easily send them, you know, an excerpt from a book. And say, have a read off this, and it might only be 5-6 pages.
Yeah,
have a read off this, and come back in if you have any thoughts. Not, here is 10 books you should, you know.
Yeah.
Again, we over. Yeah, yeah. Again, so coaches need to realize that the players that they're trying to reach out to are probably looking for something to stimulate them, but they also want it to be in some way that they can actually relate to it. Whereas if they send them too much, be like, sure, I'll never get all of that.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, ease them into that space, let's say.
That Cork artist, Will Sliney up in Ballycotton, is a great example of engaging kids over the last few days, in fairness.
Brilliant.
And by just giving them one little drawing to do each day, and my kids anyway are clamouring to start it every day since he started, you know, and I think he's got thousands all around the world doing it
Brilliant.
Now. And it's just so simple, I think, but whereas if you had said, look, I want you to do 10 pictures today, already they're getting a bit cheesed off, you know. So the simplicity of it kind of cut through, didn't it?
Yeah, and again, it comes back to that idea. This is a real time where you can ramp up the quality, when maybe the fail-safe might be to go after quantity. And it is more about quality. You talked at the start there about practice and the kind of things we do. Well, the best type of practice is a quality-laden practice. It's not to be out there for hours on end, doing mindless stuff. It's actually to identify, what do I need to work on? And how can I devise something, a task that is really pertinent to what I need to work on, and go after that intensively and intently? Mm. Well, you know what? I won't be able to do that for hours, because I just, cognitively, I won't be able to engage in that. But if I can do it for 40 minutes, that 40 minutes may be far greater use of my time than 4 or 5 hours of just mindless, repetitive actions, let's say, you know?
Yeah, same.
And the same should be applied in other spaces. I think for me, from a coach's perspective or S&C or a manager's perspective, I think this is an opportunity where you can really identify how creative your players can be.
Yeah.
What kind of probing questions, what kind of problems can you put across them in social media, WhatsApp groups and whatever else, that can just fire them up? How would you deal with this situation, lads? And it doesn't even need to be even sport related. Send them in scenarios, social scenarios, and so get them thinking. get them thinking in a way that will, you know, challenge their problem-solving skills, their figuring-out skills, their decision-making skills. These are all things that will keep people engaged. And I think that's like my young fellas at home now. Before I left this morning, I was like, you know, if you want, you know, you can put together a word search for me and I'll do it. And they were like, yeah, we'll do a word search for you. I have no idea what I'm going to go home to, but I do know it's excited them to think of, we're going to put together a word search for dad around,
yeah, yeah.
What it could be, a Lego themed word search, whatever, but
yeah.
They're away now. They're busy because I've just. It's only something small. Like, I didn't give them 10 things to do, and I only asked them. You know, they may have said no, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean the lads on our rugby podcast, Duncan and Duncan, mentioned a couple of weeks ago that Razzie, when he came into Munster first, I think they had a shocker somewhere, maybe Scarlets or somewhere, he sent them all. A task to text him by the following morning as to why they were such a coward during the game, which right. sounded a little bit harsh, but wow. I suppose in terms of, let's say, setting players tasks to think about stuff,
yeah.
it's an example. Maybe not the best example in terms of
yeah,
inspiring players, let's say, but then again, you know, there's tough love as well, I suppose.
There is, but it's an interesting one. I was very fortunate while Rassie was in Munster to spend some time down there for a few days, just observing what they were doing and just kind of contributing things around a skill acquisition perspective. And I couldn't believe how open he was. I'd never met the man before in my life.
Yeah.
And yet, even at the end of the first day, he was like, okay, tell me, what did you see? And I'm like, I know, I think, you know, and he was like, Ed, if you know, you're welcome, but the reason you're here is for you to tell us what we need to work on.
Yeah.
Like, there was no
no pushy-footing around.
No, absolutely not. And he was just so open, and you even see some of his own posts recently since the World Cup on Twitter. He's sending up little videos. Because he's so genuine,
yes.
I'm not too sure if it ever would come across as tough love, because he's just genuinely asking for you to engage, you know.
Well, the impression I got from all these,
it's not for dramatic relief, let's say,
yes.
you know.
Yeah,
he's
yeah,
actually
yeah.
genuinely looking to engage you as an individual, but also then engage his coaches at that like really deep level. Why didn't this work, or why did it work, and is this something we can repeat?
And coward might have been slightly lost in translation or whatever,
yeah, course,
there, you know, with the Afrikaans. But and in fairness, the impression from all those guys is they would do anything for him. You know, they all loved him anyway.
Incredible.
So like it is.
And again, you can even see, let's say, the Jacques Nienaber, who was his coach back then, along with Jerry and Felix. The key there was again engagement from the players. I couldn't believe how many questions he asked of players before training, with his charts on the wall with different things, defensive systems and attacking fit systems. But he was just there. They were just a probe. He wasn't coming with answers. It was incredible how question led.
Right.
Their entire environment was. So they had created a space of, if you get comfortable with being challenged here, you're going to have no problem with any question you're asked.
Yeah.
And I think that's something, again, that goes back to that idea of psychological safety. Rassie created an environment where people felt safe with him, be that to mess up, to do well, and, you know, but also to challenge and to push back. It's pretty obvious, again, where you can see the impact of what he's done since he left, but also the people he brought with him. You know, it is interesting where the people he brought with him are also of that ilk of self-investment, self-reflection, you know, like Felix Jones. I read an article about him shortly after he left Munster, and it just screamed, it jumped off the page that this was a guy who was aggressively and ambitiously going after himself.
Yeah.
He's not pointing fingers at anyone else. He is trying to find out what's the best version of myself for now. And you know what? It's going to change next year and next year and next year. And I think, again, these are the kind of behaviours that we sometimes can lose sight of. We may have the ideas of them, but in season it gets kind of lost in the speed of the season and the noise. This is an opportunity to sit back and reflect and just be thinking, what can I do better? You're talking about podcasts there. There's Stuart Armstrong does the Talent Equation podcast, and it is incredible. As he said himself, it's not edited. It's just off the cuff. It's talking with coaches and coach educators and people who've succeeded, but also people who failed and so on and so forth. And I think the one overriding thing you get from a lot of the talks on there is the people who find themselves doing the jobs that they love had to go through a lot of tough stuff to get to there, but they were prepared to go through the tough stuff, you know?
Yeah, sure.
They look back fondly on the times when they failed because it encouraged them to maybe have a closer look at themselves, you know? And I think that seems to be an overarching theme about guests he has and other people have in their podcasts, which is, you know, if I had my time again, I would do it. And then all of a sudden you come across people and say, well, actually, during my time, I'm making time to, you know, and it's something, again, in context of today, a fantastic task that coaches can do, but especially players can do, is write a letter to your pre-COVID-19 self, you know? Yeah. Sit down and jot a letter to yourself and be like, okay, this is what I'd like, because we've seen Kobe Bryant, who we lost earlier this year, and many other world-class athletes who write a letter to their former self after they've retired about the things that they should do. Well, you know, write a letter to yourself now. Sit down and pen it. No one's ever going to see it. Write a letter to yourself about the things you'd like to do better when you come back, that you'd like to have learned from in this time off. It can be a very powerful thing to do. As a coach, I've done it, and it's stark when I go back and I open up sometimes, I'm like, whoa, as I said previously, I find myself thinking, I need to write some letters to former people I've worked with to say, I'm sorry for what I put you through, because you know what? What I was doing back then, I'm not too sure I would do now, and, you know, forgive me.
Well, anyway, I think Munster won the next 20 matches after that text. That's what the lads tell me anyway. So, that's the narrative that we've established.
That's good, yeah.
Another mail in for John Crowley in Killarney, just looking for help for individual training for underage players, under 8 to under 16. Is there, look, he says, I can't think of anything that doesn't involve just kicking the ball off a wall. Would love to hear ideas. And that's funny, when I often say to the girls down the training in Douglas that I'm involved with, I kick the ball off the wall for a while during the week, but some of them say, look, I don't have a wall to kick it off, you know? So, yeah, I mean, it's...
I think for kids of that age, and a great question, because I think everybody can relate to a question like that, because we are either volunteer coaches like you and I are with our local clubs and the like, you know, or we've kids ourselves, or we've people that we know, you know what I mean, that are involved and they're asking us about what to do. And I think the big thing for me is about movement. You know, we hear a lot about these fundamental movement skills and the like. Our kids nowadays are not as movement oriented as the kids of yesteryear. And I think this is an opportunity to have them move, you know, set up a, you know, like the home is an unbelievable resource for movement if we allow it to be. If we can kind of get away from our nanny state feeling
health
at
and
home,
safety,
you know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm reminded of a scene in Lethal Weapon when Mel Gibson is comparing scars with one of the co-stars, you know, when they're comparing scars. We don't have as many scars nowadays, our kids, let's say, you know. We don't have as many bumps and bruises. It's all right to have bumps and bruises. And one of the things that, like, I'd have the boys at home having a race on your hands and feet, going downstairs.
Down the stairs.
Down the stairs on your hands and feet.
Yeah.
It's hilarious. And do they fumble and rumble and tumble?
Head first?
They do. Yeah. Hands first, going
hands
downstairs.
First. Yeah.
So your head is first, yeah. And then go back up the stairs backwards with feet first. hands and feet up the stairs with your feet first. Why not? Because you know what? I'm 46. I probably would have done those things. I probably did those things climbing trees. And there's pictures of me in our garden at the top of a tree, at the top of a tree with my mate, hitting a slitter up at me. and I'm to try and catch it.
Ah, yeah, that's recommended in all the health and safety guys.
But that's the thing, you know.
yeah.
Now
I know what you mean. Yeah, I mean my lad has invented some kind of a springboard off the armchair that involves a kind of a somersault before he gets onto the couch. And I'm sort of I'm wondering whether I should kind of tell him to stop or whether, you know, look, it's.
They're going to have bumps and bruises and bangs and all that. And again, of course, with a nod, a tip of the hat to health and safety, but also let them be kids too, you know.
Yeah.
And again, you're talking about resources. There are unbelievable resources.
Yeah.
I coach kids. Unbelievable resource for parents to work with their kids.
What's where would you find that one?
So again, iCoachKids.eu, I think it is.
Yeah, grand.
Boing Kids, B-O-I-N-G, Boing Kids. Unbelievable resource for kids and games. There's also people that keep youngsters involved who are focused more on adolescent kids.
Yeah.
So that group can keep youngsters involved. They're based out of the University of Limerick. But on top of that, then there's key people like Gordon McClelland. He runs a program called Working with Parents in Sport. He's on Twitter at _WWPIS. He has an unbelievable amount of resources for parents about how to engage with their kids, you know. Yeah. And there's another guy, Richard Shorter. He's at Non-Perfect Dad. Again, loads of ideas to actually engage your kids in ways that the kids want to engage, you know.
Yeah.
It's speaking the kids' language to them. And actually, with that in mind, I'm reminded of a couple of books that were sent to me. And I never quite know what they saw that they felt they needed to send them to me. But a couple of books, there was, and I wrote them down, there was Calm Parents, Happy Kids was one. And then by the same author, Laura Markham, Calm Parents, Happy Siblings. And again, some really useful things for coaches. Like, they're coaching books for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a parent, but I'm trying to coach them too. Not really in sport, but just kind of life stuff, you know?
Yeah.
And it's amazing and how simple. Like, these are people who are experts in their area. You don't get any training to be a parent, you know?
No.
And yet there are people out there who actually, it is their expertise because they've looked at parent-kids interaction and behavior and stuff, you know? And there's one other absolute classic, How to Talk So Kids Will Listen and Listen So Kids Will Talk. What a book. Like, again, very easily to read. But again, for me, that's a coaching book. I learned more from that. Those three books are supposed to be targeted at parents, and yet I learned more about coaching from those books than most coaching books.
That's a great point, isn't it? Because we all know the coach, like, who somehow is able to get him to listen immediately when he walks into a room of 25
Incredible.
Kids, and it's not easy.
You've hit the nail on the head there again, because that is Laura Markham's books, and she has a website, Aha Parenting, I think it is. They're so simple. You read them and you're thinking, and that's why she calls it Aha Parenting. You're reading and you're thinking, oh my, that is so straightforward. I'm a parent. I have an 11-year-old and a 7-year-old. How have I never thought of that kind of thing?
But here's
someone whose entire life is devoted to helping parents connect. Well, what do we try and do as coaches? Connect with our players. So we're saying it a lot, but it's important to repeat it. This is an opportunity to find resources that you may not normally have the time to find.
Yeah.
And to take you away from Netflix and Amazon Prime and the Disney streaming device and the box sets. And
parents are having to turn it to teachers for these couple of weeks anyway, because they've got a list of homework to be done for the next few weeks. So you might as well bolt on a bit of PE onto your day.
But again, that's those find four different ways to get from downstairs to upstairs.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah,
you know, go outside in the garden and try and find, you know, try and find three different things in the garden that you could eat. You know,
our garden for that one. Yeah,
I don't know. I'm just saying, our kids. I know my two. They are ripe for stimulation right now. They're just...
Because
again, I think what people need to remember is they would be in school right now in a very ordered, structured, routine day. They work for a few hours. They get a morning break. They work for a few hours. They get a lunch break. They work for a couple of hours. They go home. They do their homework. So they're in a behavioral pattern as it is. They won't bite back too much if they feel I'm doing something. Let's say, you know,
that's true. And whereas if you do leave it a week and a half or 2 weeks, they do get into a different routine.
Cabin
entirely.
Fever kicks in, all of a sudden they forget about. And yeah, it's not. Yeah, yeah. And I'm not a huge, again, like people who know me, I'm not a huge fan of over structure because I love chaos. Because I think so much happens in chaos. But so try and create a little bit of controlled chaos.
Yeah,
for the next couple of weeks. Yeah, yeah. So like that email said from Killarney, go to the resources from the experts who spent their career on trying to help kids move and help kids develop their skills, let's say, you know. Because there's great ways to do it. There's great and kids, look, I find them so creative if we can get out of their way very often.
Yeah. Brilliant. So is there anything else on your list there? I know the rest of the questions we have are more or less along those lines. Yeah. What do I do with my under-8s, or what do I do with my under-10s, you know? If there's anything there that I haven't covered that you have in fairness, you have an exhaustive list there.
As I say, look, we could put
we'll put them all out. We will.
We'll put them out at the end of the podcast, just let people know. I think from a player's perspective, I think, because there's way more players than there are coaches, let's put it that way.
Yeah. Yeah.
So especially if we go back to that kind of high performing athlete, or even less, not the guys out there who love their sport and love to stay engaged, the big part of this for me would be to engage in some if then scenarios. If this happens, then I'm going to do this. These are pen and paper tasks that they can do. Take 15 minutes. Take out a piece of paper. Get out your pen and if then scenarios around the sport that you do. You know. To create some kind of some positive narratives around how you engage with your sport. This idea about reflective practice, how many people out there actually journal their training, journal their practice, journal their competition? Well, if you don't, ideal time to start now.
Yeah.
And even just, and you can start with just a couple of lines to sum up where you are so far this season, and then just each day, just jot it down, and it goes into its own little reflective cycle. What did I do today? Did I do it well? And if I'm going to do it tomorrow, what will I improve? Simple as that. A little cycle of reflection to kind of keep people ticking over. I do like the idea about writing a letter to your former self, you know, your pre-COVID-19 self, because we do have time. It would be, I think, managers and coaches would notice if a person came back with an improved behavior, an improved mindset, an improved approach.
Improved left foot, maybe.
An improved left foot, maybe. Yeah, yeah. And again, that's a nice one. You know, try a new skill. Go online and try and find out how to do a three ball juggle. You know,
yeah.
There's loads of little tasks that will challenge you with a kind of motor in a motor way, but also in a perceptual way, and keep the mind and body moving. And something I did a couple of years ago, which I never thought I would ever do, was teach myself how to solve a Rubik's Cube. Always thought, oh, that's not me. I'm just not that way of a kind of thinking.
Yeah.
And I found this unbelievable tutorial on YouTube. I went out and bought a Rubik's Cube, I don't know, a couple of quid, and I started engaging in it.
I was tackling the kids one there a couple of weeks ago. I could do it when I was 12.
I could never do it. I never had the patience to stick with it. And I'd convinced myself, classic self-fulfilling prophecy, I'm just not that type of a kid.
I can't do it now, though. I can't. I'm going to have to go back. I've
since figured out that, you know, I can now solve a Rubik's Cube, which I'm not too sure it's going to add anything. It's not going on my CV or anything, but but it's one of those things. It makes you realise that, you know, you can teach an old dog new tricks, and that's all. It's good to still engage in those type of things, let's say. And some good, you know, we're talking about books, easy books to read for athletes. The Pressure Principle by Dave Allred.
Really good
book around just challenging how you practice. Are you really practicing the right stuff? Or are you kind of giving yourself a little bit of an out, you know?
Yeah.
The Talent Code by Daniel Coyle, again, the guy who wrote the Culture Code that we were speaking to for managers and coaches. The Talent Code is a great book on little things to check in on. Think of yourself how you practice while you're reading that book, and it might make you realize, actually, I could do a lot better in my practice. The quality of my practice is probably not to where it can be, and some little adjustments. And again, his book is well referenced and well cited by good, you know, sports science research and the like. And you know, I suppose finally, I suppose from a podcast on top of the ones that you guys put out there, there's the Sports Psych podcast by Dan Abrahams. He gets applied practitioners on that show, people who are currently working with athletes from right across the sports spectrum. He speaks to them directly about, well, what do you do in that situation? And when athletes come up with this kind of thing. So athletes, when they listen to that podcast, and coaches, they're hearing things that they can relate to very quickly. And I think that's a sign of a good podcast.
Oh, totally, yeah. So look, how just to wrap up, and look, you've been great with your time, and we appreciate it. Will it affect you? A lot of your work now at the moment is in golf.
It is.
Away from GA.
Last few years, I seem to be more in the golf space than anything else. It's interesting because all the tours now are on a downtime. Mm. So, ironically, golf appears to be the sport that people are saying, get out and have a game of golf. You're outside.
Yeah.
It's very easy to maintain social distance. Even there, I've heard now golf courses local to us have removed the flags from all the pins, removed the flags from the putting green, the practice areas, to reduce any likelihood. And if you're going to take the ball out of the hole, take it out with your gloves. So my work probably won't stop because everyone's off the tour, and we'll kind of set up some good matches and some good practice environments for the guys to engage in. And as we said, even in a WhatsApp group yesterday amongst us, so long as we're vigilant to abide by the guidelines from the HSE and the government, we'll continue and we'll continue to work, let's say, you know. And I think that is the thing. Even at yesterday now on the golf course, we could see there was people, and it's great to see people actually, you know, abiding by the rules, let's say, because the rules have changed for the next few weeks. You could see people walking down the fairway, and they were walking quite a distance apart from each other, you know.
Yeah.
And as I said, the flags were removed and stuff. And I think so long as people follow the guidelines, I think, you know, as a country, and I suppose globally, I think that's all we can do. Listen to the experts and follow the guidelines and don't do anything stupid, let's say, you know.
Yeah, and obviously a worrying time for a lot of those golfers because a lot of those lads are really relying on the next paycheck for their livelihoods, aren't
Absolutely.
They?
Absolutely, and it's fair play because it's a tough time for a lot of people. It is. Mm. Their livelihoods are at stake, especially when you consider the European Tour, the Challenge Tour. They're the two main tours in this side of this part of the world. They've already lost events. Their sponsors have pulled out and the like. And I think, you know, I think the players are in for a tough time. And I think, again, to their own respective coaches and family members and stuff, it's a time to realize that these people, they're going to experience a lot of challenges, let's say, you know, and it's it's going to touch a lot of people, this, if not everybody, let's say, you know.
Yeah.
But when you speak to it like that, the livelihoods of these athletes is significantly being impacted right now, you know. So it's interesting times, let's say.
Yeah, well, brilliant. Listen, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks very much.
Pleasure.
So our thanks to Ed for that, for taking his time. Tune in again tomorrow where we'll have a chat with Cork legend and Cork coach Ger Cunningham, just to see how the Cork hurlers are coping in this shutdown. Until then, stay safe.
Allianz. Supporting all 32 counties through the Allianz Leagues.